This podcast is sponsored by FATT, F-A-T-T, a range of keto on-the-go snacks, including cookies, brownies, chocolate bites, bars, Fat Jacks, and muffins. FATT snacks are delicious, natural, and always free from sweeteners, fillers, and seed oils. Find FATT snacks at www.livefatt.com. That's LIVEFATT.com. Use the code FABULOUSLY10, that's 10, to give an extra 10% off one-time purchases, not valid on subscribe and save. Support the Fabulously Keto podcast and join me in my mission to bring the knowledge of health and well-being to the world so that men and women can make many meaningful changes in their lives. Every podcast episode gives people the chance to learn and improve their health, and I want to be able to continuously deliver fabulous content. Each episode needs resources, inviting and coordinating with our generous guests, conducting and recording inspiring interviews, bringing you fully edited interviews, crafting episode artwork, engaging our audience through social media content, including visuals, content, and audio clips, sharing across various social media platforms, ensuring our dedicated subscribers receive timely newsletters. Your support is pivotal in sustaining the Fabulously Keto podcast. Whether through a one-time contribution or a recurring monthly pledge, start from as little as $1 or £1. Every bit counts. I understand our community spans the globe, and for this reason, I offer payment options in both US dollars or British pounds. Whilst we do have a sponsor for the podcast, that goes only partway to covering some of the costs, and I'm really grateful to FATT for their assistance and their support. There are additional costs, including my time investment, which still have to be covered by me. Your support bridges this gap and ensures that I can continue to deliver premium content without compromise. To see the ways that you can support us, go to fabulouslyketo.com/podcast. But I'd really like to take a few seconds to tell you about our Super Fabulously Keto supporter option. This costs £10 or $12.50 a month. And as a Super Fabulously Keto supporter, you'll get your name mentioned at the top of the show. You'll get access to the podcast before it's released for general listening with reduced intros and outro messages. You'll be part of a private Facebook group exclusively for Super Fabulously Keto supporters, where you can share with other members and make friends. And you'll be invited to our monthly group Zoom calls with me, where we'll discuss topics, answer questions, and hold each other accountable to goals. Topics will cover real food, low carb, intermittent fasting, extended fasting, keto, and carnivore. You'll be able to try different protocols to move the needle on your journey. So that is available also from our Fabulously Keto page, support. So that's fabulouslyketo.com/support. I really appreciate any support you can give.
Welcome to the Fabulously Keto podcast, aimed at improving health, vitality, and quality of life. Eating real food in a ketogenic lifestyle. I'm Jackie Fletcher, and I'm based in the UK.
And I'm Louise Reynolds, an Aussie currently based in Bangkok, Thailand.
Each week, we will be bringing you guests who share their stories and discuss a range of topics which we hope will improve your health and well-being.
Many of the guests, like us, came to keto for weight loss and have stayed for their well-being, numerous health benefits, and because they are living their best lives. We hope you will be inspired to incorporate these ideas into your own health journey so that you can feel better than you ever have before.
Thinking about starting keto? Take a listen to episode number 2, What is Keto and How to Start? Welcome to episode 190 of the Fabulously Keto podcast. Today I'm talking to Doug Reynolds and Pam Devine. I was on a call with Doug Reynolds, and he was saying how he wanted to come to London to the PHC conference, and he was going to ask the board. The next call we were on, he told me that him and Pam are coming to London, so we organised this recording. Doug and I are regularly on calls together with Jeff Cotterman, and Pam is often chatting in the background. I previously interviewed Doug in episode 46 and Pam in episode 90. Here's a bit about Pam. When Pam Devine turned 47, she was super excited that she'd found something that helped her to lose the weight that she had put on since turning 40. Up until that point, no matter what she did, she couldn't lose it. Pam felt she worked out more than many of the people she encountered during her workday and was getting super frustrated with her failure to keep her weight under control. Once she and her partner Doug Reynolds found keto and changed their way of eating, the weight dropped away and she found peace of mind, feeling totally satiated and more focused than she has ever been. Best yet, the ups and downs of blood sugar roller coaster have calmed and she feels like she's found food freedom, lowering her growing anxiety of not knowing what to eat for health. Now with Doug, Pam hosts the Low Carb USA events that bring together medical professional and experts in the low carb, keto and carnivore world to share their knowledge and the latest research with other health professionals and non-healthcare people. They're working towards halting the catastrophic rise in obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other chronic diseases that we've seen since 1977. Pam is also one of the key founding members and volunteers of the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners. And here's a bit about Doug. Low Carb USA, now called Symposium of Metabolic Health, provides a platform for internationally renowned scientists and medical practitioners to present the ever-increasing body of evidence on the benefits of reducing carbohydrates in the diet and adding in healthy fats. It has now evolved into one of the primary resources for the low-carb community. This includes a huge library of educational videos and a growing database of practitioners and dietitians and sports trainers who are open to the low-carb restriction conversation, as well as a searchable database for papers and articles covering the research into the evidence supporting this lifestyle. The SMHP is a non-profit for practitioners focused on metabolic health, and they have a panel of advisors to oversee the creation and maintenance of a set of clinical guidelines for therapeutic carbohydrate restriction, which was first published in May 2019. The SMHP also defines numerous pathways for accreditation, and the forums encourage open discussion, which helps to establish standard of care around carbohydrate restriction. So let's go and hear from Pam and Doug. Welcome, Doug Reynolds and Pam Devine, to the Fabulously Keto podcast. I've had you both on at different times, but now we've got you together. Hey.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, yeah.
And I'm going to ask where in the world you are, because I know you're not in the same place you were last time.
Who wants to answer that one? Yeah, Doug.
We're in Corpus Christi in Texas now. A lot of reasons for moving from San Diego, but we're adjusting. It's a whole new life in Texas, that's for sure.
Is it very different?
The politics are different and the people are different, and it's flat here, which we were not, in San Diego wasn't like that. But there's all sorts of things that we didn't do. I didn't do. I got into hunting and all sorts of stuff that I would never have been involved with in California. Duck hunting. I'm trying to get out to hunt some deer and pheasant hunting. It's been something. I don't know. I grew up in a farm back in Rhodesia, and South Africa in my early days. I used to do a lot of hunting and that as a kid, but never really since then. And the military kind of got the gun thing out of my system for a while. So yeah, it's nice to start up a new passion.
So have you caught anything yet? I don't know.
Have I?
Is catch the right word? Have you
shot? No, yeah. So I'm still trying to get out to get on a deer hunt. So I've got all that stuff and my rifle zeroed in and all of that. But when I went pheasant hunting, we got a whole lot of pheasants. But I don't know how much time you've got, but what they do there is they just breast them. And I was like horrified. It's like, this is such a waste, you know? And so the next day I asked them if I could go to where they clean them. That's like quite a high level thing. So everybody just goes to the pub and there's a crew that basically cleans all the birds and breasts them. So I went and joined them and I literally was ripping open all the carcasses after they'd breasted them. And I was harvesting the hearts and the livers from them. And put them in a bag, which they put in the deep freeze, and I brought that back with me. So on top of a big bag of breasts, I had a big bag of hearts and pheasant livers as well. And the guys in the lodge were calling me Dr. Death. it was pretty funny. But we have done some duck hunting, which is very big here in Corpus Christi. I've been out a few times there, and one of the guys I've become really friendly with, he does a lot of hunting and shoots more, a lot more than he's able to consume himself. So he gives us a lot of duck meat as well. So, and it's Ospan. It's awesome.
Yeah,
we
delicious.
Never really ate that's much brilliant. Duck there. It was hard to really find. But at least through the season, it's like plentiful. Yeah, it's awesome. Mm.
No, I remember in California a couple of years ago, I wanted to get duck because duck doesn't really love turkey. So our Thanksgiving holiday is usually around turkey. So I started looking for a duck because I had come across one a year before in our grocery store. So I started looking for a good place to buy a nice duck. And the Central Valley of California had nicely raised ducks and in a ranch and in their pond, but it was $75 without shipping. Like you still had to pay for shipping. And I was like, and ducks aren't very big. So I was like, I don't think I can make $75 for a duck. So it's nice to be able to have him catch it
yeah.
or get it from friends.
And how are you adjusting, Pam? Because you've moved from your hometown, haven't you?
I have. It's an adjustment. At least we've been back already twice to visit my family. We just actually got back from a trip and spent some time with my parents and my sister. But it's interesting because the one thing Doug didn't mention is we moved to a small town on purpose. So it's really interesting to live in a small town. Again, I've done it before many, many years ago. And it says there's 30,000 people on the island of North Padre Island here in Corpus Christi, but I don't know if there's ever that many people here all at one time. There's some multifamily home and apartments and condos and Airbnbs and stuff, but I don't know what the full-time resident population is. But there's literally like one main road and three stoplights and a few markets and six
gates at our airport.
Six gates at our airport only. And we don't go OTV very often, which is over the bridge, so into town. And, you know, if we're going to go to the main grocery store or do any of the main shopping, we can go into town. But that's still 350,000 only in Corpus. So it's a lot different than San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm getting you on because Doug and I were chatting the other week and he said, I'm coming to London to the PHC conference. We're coming to London. For the PHC conference. I thought, let's do an episode. We're recording at the end of March, but we're going to put it out around about the PHC conference time.
Okay.
And we're just going to, what we're going to talk about? We're just going to talk about stuff. So I know, Doug, you wanted to talk about the journal. So do you want to start there?
Yeah, I think, you know, every time I did my kind of opening talks at the Low Carb USA events, it's kind of really just mapping out our journey, you know. And so every time something more has happened, we started out with the plan of doing one conference. And now we just in Boca did our 20th conference. We've had this Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners like grow out of this nonprofit, now grow out of the Low Carb USA organization. And it's just such an amazing thing that we didn't know when we built it. We had no idea how it was going to go down. And it's just been so well accepted. And like, we've got this accreditation process that we've got in place, and people are clamoring to get accredited. You know, we have 80 people accredited already, and then probably double that again somewhere in the process of getting accredited.
Jackie's accredited MHP, isn't she?
I was gonna say
there's a lot of people in the process.
I'm one of them.
But so the latest thing that we have added is a journal. So it's called the Journal of Metabolic Health. And the idea of it is that now there's a place where people can come and publish their science, you know, the research that they've done, case studies, all sorts of things related to this metabolic health, therapeutic carbohydrate reduction, lifestyle and dietary interventions as opposed to medications to address, you know, metabolic dysfunction. And normally it's really, really difficult to get something like that published in a mainstream journal because there's, you know, you can't say, oh, only send it to reviewers who know about low carb. And there's the majority of people who are not on board with this. And who are actually sometimes very anti it. And so if they get sent an article or you know, a research paper or something to review, they just refuse to let it through just on principle because they don't believe in you know, TCR. And so we now have a journal where that doesn't happen. Like, we have quite a variety of reviewers, but we just make sure that they're always at least open to the conversation. They don't have to be totally on board, but they at least need to be able to be open-minded.
Yeah.
And so, and then on top of that, the fees for publishing. So once it gets, anybody can submit, but if it gets accepted for publishing, then there's a fee associated with that. And if you are a SMHP member, then the board has agreed to basically cover those fees so that you get to publish in this journal for free, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've had and on top of that, one of our longtime members she's a professor in a bunch of different universities, and she runs journal clubs within those universities. So she's now going to basically drive a journal club that we're going to have for the SMHP, where people can come. We're going to have monthly meetings. And we're going to have teaching how to actually collect data and how to put it into a system and what sorts of systems that you can use for that and how to analyze the data. And we've got some amazing people like Adrian Sotomayor and stuff who are agreeing to be a part of this mentoring process to teach people how to analyze and collate their data, and then other people that are going to show people how to now turn that into an article or a paper or whatever to submit to a journal. So how to teach people how to do that.
Yeah.
which is really cool. I think there's a lot of people with a lot of information out there who just don't know what to do with it.
I was going to say there's probably lots of people that have data or have access to data.
Right.
But they're not research scientists.
Right. And so they're all intimidated by this whole journal process. So we put a survey out quite recently just saying, hey, we're thinking about doing this. And she created a whole lot of questions saying, you know, are you really comfortable with putting data into a system? Are you very comfortable with writing a document that's ready for publication? And all that's try and get an idea of what people really want from this mentoring group so that we do the best job possible.
Yeah.
And then they can learn from her on how to design if they wanted to actually design a study and, you know, from start to finish. And in the best effort of trying to make sure that information gets out there, because what is the first thing when somebody says the low carb ketogenic therapeutic carbohydrate reduction? There's not enough science out there. There's not enough research. So what people will often say, which isn't actually true, because there's actually probably more than any other lifestyle intervention or diet, if you want to call it a diet. So, you know, in an effort to make sure that we're a part of the catalyst of getting more information out there and helping people publish the data so that others can find it. Super endeavor.
And you're saying that reminds me, I'm busy creating a proposal right now for to try and get some funding. And one of the things I brought up was okay, I'm kind of laying out what we already do and like this is what we want to do that we need funding for. And one of the things that we have in our link in our resources is a link to a collated or curated database of scientific papers on this keto low carb lifestyle.
And when
Pam said that, there's so many people that say, oh yeah, you know, it's there's no science. And our answer is always rubbish. There's tons of it. And there's actually nothing for the current guidelines, but we do have a lot, but that's kind of, we're just saying there's a lot. And it reminds me now that I need to point people to that link, because Sarah Rice has done the most astounding job of finding all the papers that are out there, making sure that they are legit and that there's free of wherever possible, free of biases and stuff like that, and only selecting the best stuff, and then curating it so that, you know, you can do a search on insulin resistance or something like that, and you'll come up with all these papers that that talk about that.
Is that on the SM?
It's on the SMHP site under resources,
right?
And then it says science, and then papers.
Okay, well, we can put that in the show notes.
Yeah,
that'd be fantastic, because there's so many things.
When Pam was saying that, it reminded me that, because I'd just been reminded myself while I was writing this proposal about the fact that there is that link. And then anybody that says there's no science, it's just, there here is proof that that's not true.
Yeah. And then there's this textbook, if anybody wants to get into really even more in-depth research, entirely cited with the research studies and that the Noakes Foundation, the Nutrition Network, put together with so many of the leading minds in the field that we've been working with over the years, quite a few new ones. And if anybody's looking for this kind of research, they can go to the smhp.org, click on that research link, and in addition, get this textbook. It has amazing amount of research, and it goes along with one of the courses that's the key component of the accreditation pathway on the SMHP's accreditation online education.
So you run two conferences a year
as Low Carb USA. We do, yeah. I mean, there's a strong collaboration with the SMHP, but still, I'm at pains to point out to people that at least for now, we are two separate organizations. You know, Low Carb USA is really there for the for some of the training and this provision of these events and all the CME recordings afterwards, and you know, dealing with the CME application and all of that.
So you run these two conferences every year. Do you get to go as a participant and sit back and watch other conferences very much?
No, but we're actually really excited to be able to do that. Over the last couple of years, as we've been able to go and have a table and talk about the SMHP accreditation and participate as an exhibitor, we've also been able to participate as an attendee a little bit. Like mostly we're there in the exhibition area, and then, but being able to go in and listen to the talks and not be the ones doing all the organization. Like, I know it's a big relief for Doug not to have to worry about the timing and this, and we don't have to deal with anything that goes on at the hotel, which is always really nice. Like, nobody's coming to us and saying it's too hot in the room, it's too cold in the room, there's water's out, the lighting, the sound, or anything, which is always nice. And we have a little bit more time to talk to people. We just got back from Dave Feldman's fundraiser for Speaking of Research and Science. He did want himself to fund the cholesterol research that he's doing on the Citizen Science Foundation, and they call it the COSI. What are they calling? Collaboration in Science? Citizen Science?
It's citizen science.
Yeah. So we actually, they set up the exhibition tables inside the lecture hall. So everything was all together. So we got to hear all the talks, which was really fun.
Excellent.
Yeah. The only problem with that, though, is that the minute the next talk starts, your conversation with whoever shuts down.
Yeah.
Whereas, like when we went to the Denver conference last year, and I went to Dave Feldman's talk at that conference, and that was the only talk that I actually went into the hall for, because we just ended up having conversations with people that when the next one started, we just kept talking.
Yeah.
And so you get to, if you're outside of the hall, you get to have much better conversations with the people so you end up doing a better job of being there to represent the SMHP, which is what we were there for. But you don't necessarily get to see many of the talks.
For both of them, I found, like, especially in Denver, because like we had more time, but to talk to practitioners who can tell you about how much their practice has changed by changing over from the standard of care that they were originally doing. Yeah. The amounts of medications that were being prescribed, the being having to do things in a way, standard of care that wasn't really effective. So it wasn't changing people's lives, you know, it was just kind of putting some band-aids on symptoms, never reversing anything that is, you know, like type 2 diabetes, telling people, I'm sorry, this is chronic and progressive. We're just going to manage your symptoms the best we can. And getting frustrated, you know, it's going to be great to see Dr. Unwin again, because that story that he tells really resonates with us, to make sure that there's education and information out there that the doctors have, that their patients don't have to yell at them and say, you should have told me this, I shouldn't have had to find this online. And to lose weight, to get off my medications, to reverse my type 2 diabetes, to lower my blood pressure, all those things that come along with therapeutic carbohydrate reduction. So, and, you know, we talked to psychologists and psychiatrists who are able to help their patients. I talked to a 20-year-old kid. I say he's a kid, but he's super passionate and active in getting involved with families of autistic children and teaching them activities like tennis, but then going into their home and actually teaching them how to prepare food so they're not eating a lot of processed food. They're taking out food that might be giving this autistic child symptoms of dysfunction that is actually changing their lives to better their communication, better their quality of life. Their whole family life completely changes. And that was 2 years ago, Denver, within probably 3 months after our conversation, long conversation of what is the accreditation, what are the courses, he completed everything, got accredited as an MHP, found out ways that he could better help his clients, his young clients and their families, because he just had seen it with one family and had seen it with the second family and then just wanted to be able to reach more people. And that was astounding.
Yeah. And I think it's great that these young people are taking it and running with it, because young people will listen to young people. You know,
right.
They're not going to listen to me because I could be their grandmother.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get it with my boys who are, you know, they're just 21. They get the eye rolling thing. although a few weeks ago, Ben, they were on holiday last week, and Ben only booked up at the last minute, and he'd been on a, or what's the word? He was bulking up, and now he was going on holiday and he needed to cut. So he was on carnivore. Oh,
he's
amazingly.
Low carb, very, very low carb.
So that's because somebody else told him, you know, he has done keto before, but, you know, he did talk to me about it, and he did tell me all his protein and his fat and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, eat more fat, eat more fat.
That's fantastic.
That's cool.
That must be great for you to see. So hopefully he'll see it. And then he might say, you know what? I felt like a little bit different, and I felt really good. Maybe I'll keep doing this.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. It. You know, yeah. They've just got to find their own way. But hopefully they've had a head start. You know, I didn't find out this journey till I was 54. So hopefully they will find it a bit sooner than that.
Get it sooner, yeah.
Yeah.
But what you say about young people is so... It's so true, you know. I mean, especially when we first started, the majority of people that have taken this on are people that have developed all these metabolic conditions and dysfunction down the road, right? They're our age. And the young people are like I used to be when I was, you know, like 40 years ago, like I was bulletproof.
Yeah.
And when I come across a youngster who gets it and is excited about it, it makes my day. And I really like to nurture them and cultivate that passion, because we've got two young kids on our board of the SMHP, because one of the older board members had to step aside for family reasons. And we just happened to have these two. At the time, they were husband and wife interns still at that stage, sitting in the Boca Low Carb USA conference. And Tro couldn't be there because he'd literally tested positive for COVID as he was about to get on the plane. And so, but he was watching the live stream and chatting with Pam at the back of the room. And this Laura got up to the microphone to ask a question, and it was so I'm running out of expletives here. It was so well thought of and well and clear how well she understood this concept and everything, you know. And her question was so intelligent. Like Tro is like writing to Pam, like, who is this girl? I need to hire her.
Laura and Matt.
Laura. And Matt, yeah.
Yeah.
So now Laura now does work for Tro.
Yeah.
And she's on. And that Sunday night when we had the dinner that we have normally with the speakers that are left behind, I invited them to come and join us. And while we were sitting there, I spoke to them about this. Literally that opening had just opened up. And I said, what are your thoughts on serving, you know, on our board of directors? And they're eyes went like this big. So Laura is actually on the board. Matt is the chairman of the resources committee, and he does such an amazing job. He's busy at the moment helping us get our accreditation through the ACCME application, which is so hectic. I don't know. I just withered when I looked at what was going to be involved in doing that. And he's just finished. He's just, I think now he's finished his residency, but he's starting his practice and everything. And on top of that, he's doing all of this other work for us.
Yeah.
Because he's so passionate about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to like replicate and duplicate these two, like in a big way, because we need, that's anyway, sorry. I get really excited when I come across young people that get it.
And talk about the amazing energy. And, you know, one of the efforts is, you know, reaching, so they've got a project to write some curriculum for medical students, because we don't want to wait until, like you said, a lot of people, you just said in general, find this later in life to help themselves. Well, physicians are unfortunately getting sick with metabolic dysfunction and type 2 diabetes and can't lose weight and are finding this offline for themselves, but they weren't taught this in medical school. They haven't been taught in any of their continuing medical education conferences or online courses or anything about therapeutic carbohydrate reduction. So they're still giving people old advice that says move more, eat less and move more, which nobody can move more and eat less. Usually they're hungry and they're tired.
Yeah.
Able to figure that out. So, you know, the more we can reach a younger population and figure out, you know, better awareness campaigns and tell people about more of these conferences. So we're super excited to go to the UK and be able to meet some of the people we'll get to see again that we've seen before that have come over to the States, and some, and be able to also meet new people, put together some new projects and collaborate more. So this is an international worldwide effort. I do want to go back quickly. Let's come back to this, because while we were talking about Matt and Laura, I wanted to make sure that we highlighted them and our advocacy committee, who have spent a whole heck of a lot of time creating resources that don't get talked about enough. I don't think enough people know about them. So anybody who's listening to this, again, go to the smhp.org, go to the resources tab, and just look at what these two committees have put together for both patient handouts and flyers and documents, but to look at, to utilize, but more so to either send as an e-document or print out and take to their practitioners, so that if they don't understand, for example, this is an overview of the benefits and risks of therapeutic carbohydrate reduction. If they're not familiar with it and they don't know how to support the patient, print this out and take it to them. There is a 23-page, 33-page clinical guidelines document that you can also include with it. But this short versions of things, it could be really helpful as an introduction to a practitioner who isn't familiar with it. So there's an introduction to low carb. What is it? What is a very low carb? What is a moderate low carb? And it links to studies if they're unsure about the information. They can delve further into case studies or other speaking of Dr. Unwin, that's got a study from him, and Dr. Tro, patient studies where they've worked with different populations and what they found. There's another guide about the benefits of wearing a CGM for the patient, and then in a separate document for the practitioner of how it's a useful tool, how it can help patients in different areas to see what is their blood sugar doing when they eat certain foods, what is it doing when they don't sleep well, what is it doing when they're stressed out, all those things that affect metabolic health that they might not actually really be thinking about that's affecting their hunger levels and the blood sugar levels. So there's that. There's an introduction to insulin resistance. If the practitioner hasn't really had a lot of introduction to the root cause of insulin resistance and the symptoms, signs and symptoms of insulin resistance, and it goes a little bit into fasting insulin, which is another project that we've been wanting to do to tell practitioners a little bit more about testing for fasting insulin. So Jackie, you know, in this field, we've all been talking about how you can see signs of insulin resistance and a lot sooner. And that is because your fasting insulin numbers will go up.
Yeah.
We're familiar with working in this field, the term hyperinsulinemia, right?
Yeah. Here in the UK, on the NHS, so through the National Health Service, we would not get a fasting insulin test.
Never. And so here either.
Yourself, even if you asked for it, they would, or your doctor asked for it, but they still refused.
Yeah, the doctor won't ask for it. They just won't. But actually, I have a connection with somebody who can get a reasonably priced fasting insulin test. So if anybody's listening, they want to get it, then just reach out to me and I can put you in touch.
Very good. Because it's one of the projects I think in the advocacy and the awareness committees where it's just one of the vital things that needs to be addressed in our healthcare system, that this testing is available more and that more practitioners understand it, because maybe they'll order the test, but then they don't know how to interpret it. So there are some practitioners who are going to work with us to create a chart and a graph that says, these are the numbers you want to look for. These are the numbers where, you know, it's starting to get a little bit questionable high levels of insulin. This is the numbers that you don't want to get to before you start seeing changes with blood sugars getting too high, because there is this long period of time, as Ben Bickman shows on his chart, where insulin levels are climbing so high that it's keeping the blood sugar numbers stable. Yeah. So if your doctor's only doing fasting blood sugar or having you test blood sugar after meals, or finally getting to the point where they're, you know, or looking at A1C, they're not getting the big picture, because the blood sugar levels are still pretty looking like they're pretty stable.
Yeah.
Even if they're going high and low, that average of 3 months is like just showing the average. It's not showing how high it's going. It's not showing how low it's going. It's not showing that people have dropped hypoglycemic and super hungry, and then so they eat a whole bunch and their blood sugar goes up. So those are some things that we're working on to try to make sure that more people are aware of.
So when you come over, who are you looking forward to seeing, listening to?
I was going to ask you that. I had this list up, and then I've got to click on it again and find where I put it. Because there are a few people who are new to us. The Campbells. So there's Ian Campbell, who's working in the mental health space. That's a whole other conversation that we could get into. Campbell Murdoch, I think, was someone that Doug was already even speaking to, that we're talking about collaborating in.
Excellent.
And see the unwins again. And to get to see you again. Hey, do you know if Denver's going to be attending?
No, not again.
We only get to see you online.
You're going to get such a big hug.
We finally get to give you a hug.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Probably you more than anyone.
Thanks.
I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see what comes of this Eddie Abreu talk. I spoke with Olivia about it, and, you know, I mean, he's not on the usual PCR circuit, if you want to call it that, you know, for lack of a better word. But I've had conversations with people about stuff like this recently a lot. It's like, for me, a lot of being confrontational is not productive for what we're trying to do. But at the same time, I feel like the Sean Bakers and Eddie possibly have their place, and there's a need for that. It's, you know, behaving like he does on my podcast or something is not going to do me any favors. But there's a completely different demographic, and I get a few thousand people watching me. He's got like millions.
Yeah,
you know, so it's effective. I'm thinking about it from the conference organizational side of things. That's not going to be a creditworthy talk. It's not going to be able to be used for credits if they give them out. Which we do, and we wouldn't be able to use that talk. But at the same time, I've done that a couple of times. I've had people that are a bit off the wall that are not, you know, that I kind of was expecting some pushback from some of the attendees of even having him there. But it's always generated a conversation at dinner that night. And that's what we need, you know. None of us know everything, and it's really important that we are open to debate and are able to debate in a constructive and deferential way. I hate the mudslinging stuff that goes on a lot of the time. I want people to, they can agree to disagree. That's great.
Yeah.
But have a conversation, and who knows, that little seed of something that person said that you disagree with at the time, but a little few other things build on that over time. And the next minute it germinates and it becomes something that maybe you take, you know, you take into account now, but that you didn't necessarily do before.
Yeah.
And we need to be open to that. And so for that reason, I'm really interested to see how his talk comes across and then also how it's received. And I want to listen to the conversations through that day and the next day and see what comes out of it. Because there's a place for that confrontational style as well.
Yeah. If it resonates with people because it's confrontational, or if it resonates mm-hmm. with people because he's just hitting a point in them that says, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
You're right.
You know, that's going to spark something, and he's obviously right. doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing extremely well in terms of the following and the hits that he's getting. I'm interested to see. I don't think his talk is going to be as in your face and profane as some of his YouTube videos are, but I'm just really keen to meet him and hopefully have a conversation with him about, because he knows more about reaching people than I do. I can tell you that for free.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe without being confrontational, I can maybe still learn stuff from him about how to reach more people, you know, the way I do, but maybe do it a bit differently to be more effective at reaching people.
Yeah. Pam, a couple of things. One of the things that you're good at is community and building community. And I'm sure there's going to be loads of people just in the audience that know about you or are part of the community because of what the things that you do. So tell us a bit about, you know, your role in building the community and getting involved, because as Doug said before, you just wanted to do one conference and now here we are at coming up for 21. And then what are your plans for when you're in London?
Wow. So I think I touched on it a little bit earlier. Because when just hearing the stories of people where learning therapeutic carbohydrate reduction as an intervention has changed their practice, that just really resonated with me at the very first conference. I was like, how can we not do another one where we continue to focus on helping the practitioner change their practice and change their lives? It was almost a no-brainer that we had to do another one, even though we hadn't planned another one. And then to go back to the individual stories, I mean, I always think of just a couple of people who really struck me at our very first conference. One of them had a traumatic injury in a car accident. She had crush injuries in her legs. She had a head injury. She had a neck injury. But she had all of these symptoms that her medical team didn't know how to address. So they attributed it to unknowns, unfortunately, for her. I guess there is a crush syndrome that encompasses all of these weird symptoms that somebody can get. But at the time, they really didn't put it all together or they didn't have a treatment for it. So she was getting fevers, for example. She was getting weird headaches. Maybe, I don't think she was getting seizures, but for some reason she started thinking, I know that I've heard before that the ketogenic diet is good for neurological symptoms and seizures, I wonder if I tried a low-carb ketogenic diet for my symptoms, if I would see some relief. And so she looked online and she found information to try it. And she, lo and behold, immediately started seeing over very short-term changes to her headaches and fevers, all of these things that had been bothering. And she started losing weight that she had had so much trouble over the last few years of putting on, and started losing it. She started coming out of a severe depression that she'd been in, because she'd been not only disabled, but was also had been getting sicker before that. And when she told me that story, it's like, again, we need to reach more practitioners so that they have more information to help their patients. There was a couple of other patient stories that came up where it just resonated with me. And it drives us every day to continue to try to continue to help and build more of these educational opportunities. At that time, we had no idea we'd do a second one, let alone still be doing it almost 10 years later. And like you said, our 21st conference. But along the way, we get to meet the most amazing people, not only the individuals like you, Jackie, who's had your life changed, yeah, and then decided to make it her passion and study more and get credentialed. And Doug and I here and see you on Jeff Cotterman's National Association of Sports Nutrition, getting certified as a personal trainer and a nutrition component that he does with all therapeutic carbohydrate reduction. And you're getting certified in that, and you're doing all these other trainings, and you're talking to the experts on a weekly basis on your podcast and sharing the information. Like, we've just met the most amazingly caring people. We first started locally in San Diego, where people would write to us and say, I'm so surprised to find you in our, you know, our backyard. Could we meet for dinner? So we started planning weekly, monthly dinners. They were weekly sometimes. They were monthly. Monthly meetings where we brought community together, local community. But then meeting nationwide and international people at every conference. Like, I would always tell Doug, somebody from Malaysia just signed up and they're going to come to the conference. And if someone came from the UK, you know, that was a long distance to travel, especially to San Diego. But then to get Sweden and Norway, and there's a lady who came from Czechoslovakia the very first year. And Doug tells this story often, because the second year that she came, she said, I went home and I started a Facebook group. And do you know that I have 10,000 people in my group, which represent every mile of the 10,000 miles that I traveled from the Czech Republic to San Diego last year to attend the conference. And we were like, well, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, and that was the thing. I mean, she, and I often read out the thing that she posted on Facebook for us. And I read it out. I can't do the accent, but it's broken English, right? And I read it as it was written, so people can hear it, hopefully, in her voice.
Yeah.
And she said, like, I when I got back from this thing, I decided that I had to try and teach other people about this. And so I started a Facebook group with only a few members. And it was saying, coming up this Sunday, at the rate it's going, we will hit 10,000 followers in less than a year since she started it. And yeah, she said, yeah, like one follower for 1 mile to San Diego. Thanks for being such an inspiration.
Yeah.
And during the one that we did virtually in 2020, we actually reached out to her to find out how things were going beforehand. And her following was up to 350,000 or something by then.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I guarantee you, we keep meaning to check back in with her and never get around to it before an event starts, and then you know, there's no reason until the next event comes up, just to give people an update. But I'm certain it's going to be well over 500,000 and probably heading for 1 million followers by now. And that's like one person that came and got inspired. You know, we can retire on that. You know, like, there's 1 million people in Czechoslovakia now that know about this because of one person that came to our conference.
Yeah. And like her, there'll be lots of others as well.
And this is the thing with Pam, though, is that, you know, she goes down these rabbit holes in social media and Facebook, and not so much Twitter but Instagram as well. And that's how she hears about all of these stories, because somebody just makes a comment somewhere in there, and she'll engage with them and end up in a whole conversation to find out their whole story. And it's just amazing how she has time to do anything else because of the number of people that she does, that she ends up engaging with. And that is really why we have such a cool community. It's got nothing to do with me. It's because of how she interacts with people, and they all love her, and that's cool.
Absolutely. We love you, Pam.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. I don't even know what to say now. I love people. I love to hear what inspires them and motivates them, and to see their progress and hear their journey. And it's just fantastic.
I never tire of hearing the stories, especially of just people. You know, they're not famous. They're not on the stage. They're not talking. They're not researching. They're just people and their stories and how they turn their lives around.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people on the stage, I mean, we went into this to say, let's give a platform to the people who are doing the research, who are writing the books, who are changing their patients' lives, but they're also just everyday people. And I mean, if people have said to me, I heard your voice and you're a rock star, I'm like, I am not a rock star. Thank you for putting me in whatever category that is, but I am nothing close to it. I get up in the morning and do all the usual things, and we just happen to put our face out there. And I never wanted my face to be on anything. I was like, come on, you know, I was like on the information desk and in the back of the room. And Doug was like, we need to do podcast. I'm like, I don't want to be on it. And he's like, come on, just come on it. And then when people like you, Jackie, asked me to come on, I'm like, I'm just telling you the story and I don't know who's listening. So
yeah. Yeah, that's it. We're just talking, the three of us.
Yeah. So no whoever listens in on our conversation. Yep. Hopefully this changes your life. You can write us your story, because we'd love to hear it.
Say that again.
Hopefully this changes whoever's listening lives, and if they have any of that and they want to, please write to us and tell us about it, because it would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Fabulous.
So you were talking about London. Yeah.
Yeah. When you come to London, what are you doing? What are you going to do?
We don't know yet. So we're getting in a day or so before the conference starts. Just to kind of acclimatize a bit. But then I think I've left about 2 weeks afterwards. But we haven't actually decided what to do. Pam, so I've been to London I've been to London once, where I spent some time in London and kind of explored in that. And I've been in London a couple of times, but really on the way through to Cardiff, where I was working for a while in Wales. And Pam's been there once before, but
it was just a whirlwind tour.
Yeah, so I've been to Wales, and we went up to Scotland, but then Pam said, like, what about Ireland? And I think when I went, it was quite a few years ago, and it was still a bit of a scary place back then.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all changed, and I love the Irish accent. I love the Irish people, so... Maybe that's what we'll do, is head over there and rent a car and drive around there a bit.
It will be nice, yeah. A lot of my family history, both sides of my parents are descendants, immigrants from Ireland, so it would be really interesting to go and see.
I've never been either.
You haven't? You want to come with us, Jackie?
Sure.
Do you live close to London? You're not in the city, are you?
Oh,
you're
not in the city, but... So we've got the London Underground trains.
Yes.
And our stop, which is about 3 miles down the road, is the end of one of the lines. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's just get on the train and in an hour you're in London.
Oh, nice.
Or less than an hour. Depends which part of London you are.
Right.
Croydon, where the conference
is further south. And again, if I would drive it, it would take me an hour. But as it so happens... My PhD conference buddy Heidi said I can go and stay with her, and she lives just up the road from Croydon, so we'll do that.
Nice. So we look forward to meeting Heidi because we haven't met Heidi yet. Do you know if Dan Grief is coming?
I don't know if he's coming. I can message him, but I don't.
I know. I was saying, I keep thinking to do that because he's interviewed me for his podcast and we've got close over the years. And he's come to San Diego where we didn't have a lot of time to get to talk to him. And he keeps threatening to get over here like you do to one of the conferences in the States. But it would be nice to see him.
Yeah. So he's about an hour, 50 minutes north from me. So Joanne McManamy came over, must have been 2 or 3 years ago, we did go and see him. We drove up there, went to see him.
I remember seeing that. I was super excited. And I know Allie Houston has interviewed me before. Did I see that he's going to be there? Or
I think, Rachel Brown is. So I imagine that that Allie will be there. I don't think he's on the stage.
Okay.
Or he hasn't been announced yet.
Still got one or two to announce, but he hasn't. At least with the ones they've announced, he's not scheduled to talk, I don't think.
Yeah. And he's the one that's doing a lot more work with the mental health space. I think I saw on LinkedIn recently.
Yeah, he is. So he's with Dr. Rachel Brown, and they both trained with Georgia Ead. So they're doing a lot of mental health stuff.
Which keeps coming up more and more. I noticed Bazooki Group, and there's a concentration on mental health at this London one at the PhD coming up, which will be great. And then we're going to do the same in San Diego in August, where so many people with even just, like everybody thinks run-of-the-mill depression and anxiety. Run-of-the-mill, shouldn't anxiety, depression shouldn't be, and nobody ever attributes it to food environment.
Yeah.
So it's a really important topic to discuss and bring to the forefront to make sure that people are getting help and know that maybe if they address changing their food and that it could help their moods and their quality of life. And to the most extreme cases where schizophrenia and severe bipolar is also being able to heal. We met a lady in Las Vegas just last month, who now is doing the same thing. She wants to help more people. So she's going to get accredited and do all the coursework. But her personal story is just tremendous healing from the mood swings of bipolar and severe depression and manic episodes. And her life has stabilized so much that now she wants to help more people do the same. It's just the amount of people's lives that can be changed with this is astounding.
Yeah, absolutely. Carrie is another one who healed her bipolar with.
Say that again, the name?
Carrie Brown.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard of her?
We have heard of her. We haven't had a chance to meet her to date yet. Hopefully one day.
Yeah. So she healed her. I think she worked with Ted Naiman, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, because I think she's up in the Northwest.
Well, she was in Washington, and she's now in Connecticut.
I know she moved.
Yeah, and so she healed her bipolar with a ketogenic diet.
Fantastic.
It's amazing. In a way, I suppose it's with anything, though, but I just get a bit frustrated that these interventions are not being offered, at least offered as an option, like to everyone. There's just so many people that are sick, that don't need to be. It's a bit depressing sometimes but.
I did a podcast recently with Ahmed Malek, and we were talking about how there's no money in health. So the big companies, the big corporations are never going to push it, because the sicker the people are, the better it is for their profits.
Right.
And they want you just sick enough that you need their medication, healthcare package, whatever that is.
Visit, like regular visits and all that stuff.
Care package. To keep you alive long enough to keep taking your money. They don't want you to die because then they lose a customer, but keep you going back for more. So they're
keep
never
you on the hook. Yeah. No, it's actually, yeah. Anyway,
good business don't,
let's not get started on that.
That's depressing. But I think I don't think people have enough education in nutritional benefits, nutritional medical therapy. Dietitians get education in nutritional medical therapy, but they're not getting either the therapeutic carbohydrate reduction, the level of information for that yet.
I don't think they will, because it's all funded by the food companies. So,
unfortunately,
you know, they want to sell food, and we're going to tell them not to eat that food. So they don't want to promote that.
What's giving me a little bit of faith is some of the doctors, like this vascular surgeon came to the San Diego event in August last year, and we kind of met her, and you would never believe she looks like she's about 10, but she's a very accomplished vascular surgeon, and her mom has done some amazing things as well. But she met with us and we chatted, and I think we had dinner or something, and then she learned about the SMHP and everything's a couple of months later, she's applying for accreditation. Like she's actually submitted to all of that training and done it. She's opened a metabolic clinic basically. And we saw her back when we were in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. And she would really, if she can get that clinic functional, where she wants to literally step away from her surgery,
on the medical model,
and just to be a metabolic practitioner. And literally yesterday, someone wrote to me, who's an ophthalmologist, that says, I'm just so sick and tired of all of this rubbish. How do I become an MHP? Because I want to start a metabolic clinic and step away from this mainstream medicine that I'm involved in. So, you know, one step at a time. Pam always loved Tim Noakes's comment about changing the way people eat one meal at a time.
Yeah.
And it's like one doctor at a time as well. We don't go viral, but every time we hear a story like that, we know that person's going to influence a bunch of people, and so it grows, you know.
Yeah.
And one dietitian at a time. There's been many, many, many come through. So
yeah.
And physician assistant and nurse practitioner. And it's, you know, it's, we are hopeful and we see big changes. They may be small changes in the big cogwheel, but, you know, I just met, and finally, I think I found an actual pretty good practitioner for myself here locally. It's hard to move towns and figure out how am I going to find a healthcare practitioner who's going to do what, you know, our kind, that's going to support me in my metabolic health journey. Cause we've got a listing on the SMHP's website. They're not few and far between, but they're, you know, that's a growing list. So anybody who's looking for a practitioner to support them, continue to check that list, cause it grows every day, but we need more of them. I mean, we're under 2,000 listing right now. We need 50,000 in every state, you know.
Yeah,
like we have doctors, but you know, at least my doctor is willing to learn things. I asked her, if I asked you to do a lipid panel, would you support me in getting like the particle breakdown? Do you know anything about that? She says, funny you should ask. I just asked her, a medical assistant. She says, I think we have a meeting coming up next month where they're actually going to be talking about Quest Diagnostics, which is a big lab here, talking to them and teaching them a little bit about looking at the particle size and the breakdown of the cholesterol. So that's changing. And I told her about being involved with Dave Feldman and his fundraising and the research that's going. Because, you know, one of the things that people worry about if they're going to go to low-carb therapeutic carbohydrate reduction or ketogenic diet is the amount of fat that people might be eating. And is that contributing to heart disease? Well, there's research that's happening that I could tell her about that's being studied, and we can all are pretty excited about making sure that we can tell the public and those in the field that there is research being done to test people that do maybe have higher cholesterol, because most of the time people's cholesterol normals are coming down and improving, but their inflammation markers are coming down, their blood sugars are coming down, their good HDLs going up, and all the other things look good. So why wouldn't cardiac health be improving as well?
Yeah. And we have cardiologists that will stand behind it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Many not that many yet, but they that list is growing too. So
yeah. But there are some.
Yeah, no, there are some.
It's many. They're not not everyone is saying this is going to kill you.
Mm-hmm. So right. No, that's true. Brett Scher is one of them. I mean, he's now the what's it called? He's the medical
officer for
chief medical officer or something.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. For the Suzuki Foundation, focusing on mental health. Yep. But he's a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like he was in Vegas now at Dave's conference, and he was there. Matt Bazzucchi actually was on the stage, like telling his story, his amazing story, which is why his mom and his family have got into putting some money behind this research into mental health.
Yeah.
But like every time I wandered over when Brett was having a conversation, they were asking him about heart health and lipids. They weren't asking him about mental health, because that's how we all know him. And I was like, the cardiologist guy.
I wonder if he'll come to the conference or Matt.
That would be fun, because I think, well, the Bazzucchi group I see is now supporting the PhD. So
maybe
it would be nice to see Matt and Jan and the Bazzucchi and Brett. I know Dave Feldman's working closely with them. He's actually interviewed quite a few people. I don't know how many people know about his movie that he's making. But we know the movie makers were the did the Jen. Documentary Fat Fiction.
Yeah, Jen Eisenhart. Yeah.
Jen Eisenhart, yeah.
So when Dave came over to London, we did a little and we did a short episode looking for hyper responders.
Yes.
For Dave, what to interview when he was here. So
you helped him find some people.
Well, we didn't actually, nobody came forward and said,
wow.
A, they were hyper responders and lean mass hyper responders, and B, that they would be willing to be interviewed. The only person I found for him was Jen Unwin.
Oh, she's a big part. They actually played a trailer in Vegas, and it was astounding. And Jen talked.
Jen's huge. Her cholesterol is like 600 or something.
Yeah, 18 in English. I don't know what that is in US.
So they converted it to our units for the clip that they're here. But yeah, it's one of the highest of anyone that they've measured.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's fine. And that's a cool thing about the, you know, this first set of results that have come out of this first study that he did, was that like all of these people with these high cholesterol things, they had like zero evidence of atherosclerosis or any kind of heart disease.
Yeah.
But running LDLs in the hundreds, you know, so.
I'm sure Dave will give us an update. Dave Feldman will be there in May, PhD. Yeah. He'll give us an update, because it'll be 2 months. 2 months from now, recording this almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because they've got at least another year follow up for that mm-hmm. group, but they're busy mm-hmm. designing and planning the next trial. I don't know what exactly it's going to be, but they. They're working on a second one already.
Excellent.
And Jen and Tom are making an amazing movie about this whole journey of Dave's. So,
I'm looking forward.
It's going to be good.
Well, they might travel over there and interview some more people if they're still doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
documentary. They might be finished filming.
Yeah, when I spoke with them, I think it was a bit like when I ended up going to Boise to be with them, because they were done. They'd like their budget was finished.
Yeah, right.
And I said, well, I Tom says, Doug just invited himself. He said, I need to be in your movie.
You just said, I have information I'd like to share.
I did kind of invite myself, but it was about, because we were literally, while we were away, they were in Australia. They were in San Diego filming with Brian Lenskes and whatever.
This is for Fat Fiction, is it?
For Fat Fiction. Yeah. And literally we got back. The next weekend we were in Seattle for an event that we'd been planning in Seattle that I'd planned remotely from Australia.
And we were launching the clinical guidelines.
But literally at that event, we launched the clinical guidelines. We actually published them. And then we got back from that and I got hold of them and I said, we need to get this, the fact that this document has been published, that needs to be in this movie.
Yeah.
And so I went and spent a day with them in Boise and it was amazing. It was such fantastic people. We had a lot of fun and I got in the movie too. So
I remember. I love that film. So before we finish, is there anything that you wanted to mention that we haven't really spoken about tonight or this afternoon for you?
I don't think so. I think we, you know, just generally talk about what we do. And the big thing, like Pam said in the beginning, was the one new thing that's come up that some or a lot of people don't know about was the journal.
Mm.
You know,
so how can people find out about the journal? Is it just on the SMHP?
On the website, one of the menu options says journal. And you click on there and it takes you to the actual journal page on this. IOSIS is the name of the journal organization that we published through. So it goes to our journal page on that site, and there's, you know, information about the things that have been published and ways to get published. And then once we've finished working with Melanie with the Journal Club stuff and we actually get it all in place, and she's making videos, like training videos and everything, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
But that'll all be under the journal menu option as that stuff, as we start publishing that stuff, it'll be there.
So if I could encourage people to join, how do they sign up for our newsletter? Do they do it all through the website, Doug?
It should be.
Right at
the bottom.
Oh yes.
If you scroll to the bottom, there's a sign up there.
Left hand side, sign up for news. We send out newsletters a couple times a month announcing any new endeavors or when the grant.
Yeah, so then you don't have to keep looking at the menu and the website. You'll get an email that tells you when we launch new stuff.
Great.
But pretty much every time, so we're doing an event, not quite, but roughly every 6 months, and pretty much since we started, every time I get up on the stage to welcome everybody and tell everybody how we've been doing, there's something new that we've added. So hopefully we keep that going.
Yeah, that's really cool. With some great people involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's for sure. Hardworking people. Thanks, Jackie. And is there anything else that you wanted to know, or have you covered it? We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. So we can tell people the website address. I'll let you do that, Pam.
TheSMHP.org is the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, which we've talked about the most. For a Symposium of Metabolic Health, you go to lowcarbusa.org if you wanted to join. And there's some links here on SMHP.org for education and events.
And all the conferences people can attend in person, or they can attend online.
Online, virtually as well. Yes, thank you for reminding everybody about that.
Yeah. And we can tell everyone that there's a Fabulously Keto discount code if they want to sign up for the Low Carb USA.
Yes.
So just true.
Okay. Fabulously Keto. I forgot about
one
that.
Word. Yeah.
Mm.
Save 20%.
Yeah. And then before you go, I ask all my guests for your three top tips, which I forgot to warn you about.
Top tips for implementing carbohydrate reduction in
anything
your life.
You like. Anything
or metabolic health.
For health, nutrition, well-being, mental health, whatever you like.
Keep it simple when you're cooking. That's my biggest advice most of the time. Occasionally, I'll do a big recipe, but that's very few and far between because it makes a big mess. I've got to shop and make sure that I've got all the ingredients. My cooking, which I think I really love carnivore for the reason that it's super simple.
Yep.
And you don't, and like we've learned, we don't need to have the vegetables. You don't have to have every color on your plate like we've kind of been told over the years. Taught that
my dinner cooking time now is around 5 minutes.
Maybe cook 10. A steak, cook some
steak
mince.
Or lamb chops. That's it. Nothing else.
Yeah, it's easy.
Don't need to cook veg. Yeah. Don't bother with that. Bit of cheese.
Super easy.
And what was that? Steve Barron's, Stephen Melody. We did a podcast with him. He was like the first guy we knew of that went carnivore.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a podcast with him. And he's one of his comments somewhere was the fact that eating ribeye steak every day never gets old.
So, Doug, what's your first tip?
Well, I don't know about three, but I think something that I had to learn was to be open-minded and not be dogmatic. Because I think in the keto community, that's quite common. You know, once they decide to take this on, they go in full ball and they learn all about this stuff. And then it's like, they always get in other people's faces about, oh, that's not keto. That's not keto. And that's really keto and all of that. and it's just, everybody's different, you know, and you're different. You need to find what works for you and then help other people who are thinking about it to be successful and don't chase them away. You know, examples of, is even with grass-fed beef and all of that. And, you know, you'll see people saying that you do keto and it's going to be grass-fed this and organic that. And
yeah,
if you can afford
it, yeah.
If you can afford it, then go for it. Support that. We would like to eventually all be there, you know. But we can't afford grass-fed beef all the time. We bought a whole grass-fed cow recently since we moved to Texas. But then, you know, per pound, that still works out at a fairly reasonable rate. But most of the time, we go into these big superstores and we go to the manager's special section and we buy the cheapest. We're still buying ribeye steaks and stuff, but we're buying the stuff that maybe is about to expire in a couple of days. And so it's like half price. It's grain finished. Most of the meat in most of our first world countries is pasture raised and grain finished. They aren't raised in a little silo and just like force fed grain for their whole lives. But I always say, don't ever let me hear somebody tell someone else they can't do keto because it's not grass-fed beef or it's not organic eggs or something. Brilliant if you can afford it and you have access to it. But please don't tell people that they can't do it because they don't have access to or they can't afford that stuff. That's really important to me that you support people like that and tell them, you know what, that's cool. And maybe we'll even start a business helping people and then you'll earn a bit more money. And then maybe you can get some grass-fed beef down the road if that's important to you.
Yeah.
But just get started and do it. And don't judge people. It's like, be supportive. Don't be judgmental. Maybe that's my biggest tip.
Cool. Pam, you got another tip?
I actually thought Doug was going, when he started saying something, I thought he was going in another direction. And it reminded me when he said, don't be judgmental and don't be dogmatic. the other way around is if somebody's having trouble starting or trouble sticking to it, because they're should go down the road and look at food addiction, and don't hesitate to get help if you need it. Because I don't know how many times I've heard people say, I can't do this because I love bread too much. Bread doesn't love you, unfortunately. And if it's going to make you sick, think about where you could go and look at the practitioner database on the smhp.org. Listen to Jackie's previous episodes of talk on, I think you guys did one on who, if you could do it as a moderator or as an abstainer. Yeah. One of you guys has to abstain completely and not ever have anything sweet. And one of you can moderate and just have a little bit at a time.
Yeah, I'm the moderator and Louise is the abstainer. Yeah.
You know, I can actually have a couple things and put it down and put it away.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
But I've done quite a few, some amazing podcasts on food addiction. And in fact, as we're recording today, tomorrow I've got an episode coming out, which is nothing to do with keto. So it's episode 185. And this man was addicted to cocaine. And he was spending £85,000, so that was maybe $100,000 a year on cocaine. And he got clean. And he is clean.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But you know, the thing is that you say it's got nothing to do with keto, but there's so much that I, and that's maybe my second thing. And I was like, again, don't be judgmental about people who say that they can't do it. It's too hard. Because this, I've had to learn that this food addiction thing, carbohydrate sugar addiction, is so, so powerful. But everybody's on the spectrum somewhere. I'm way on the bottom end of the spectrum. So I don't suffer from that. And so I had no tolerance for people who did tell me it was hard. And so instead of being supportive and trying to help them find what Rob Sivers calls emotional management strategies and try and help them understand ways that they may be able to get around this and beat it, I just would tell them, like, that they're being stupid. You know, it's not hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard about it. You just don't eat that stuff. So yeah, be supportive instead of, it's part of the same theme, but be aware of this food addiction component, especially if you're trying to coach people, because that's going to be the biggest source of loss of customers and clients or whatever, and people that fall off and never get back on. It's because you're never managing the addiction component.
Yeah.
So,
and they have to recognize it in themselves that they have an addiction.
Right. But you need to help them. Need to help them find that.
Yeah.
Get to that point.
Yeah.
Instead of yelling at them and telling them that they just they got no discipline.
Yeah. And Anna Fruling from Sugar Global, Sugar RX, is it? Dave Wolf and Anna Fruling, she said, you know, people that have a sugar addiction have to abstain not only from sugar but from drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, everything. They just have to abstain from everything because it's all triggering the same thing.
Right. And that was what I was trying to allude to, was with this conversation that you had with a guy that, that had a cocaine addiction. But it's very relevant, you know. And if he ever decided to do it, he would have to be dealing with his addictive personality again there.
Yeah.
And hopefully people listening to that and learning how he coped and got past that will help them to get past their sugar addiction.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of the same tools. And I think
absolutely
not activating your brain with sugary foods is going to help in the other areas of addiction. And I think there's a study out recently that someone had mentioned of it actually helping, like alcohol addiction, getting off the sugar addiction, or at least switching fuel sources or something about the component of the ketogenic
diet.
Changing
metabolism,
Changing metabolism, changing the hyperactive areas of the brain, and and some do, you know, subduing some of those hyperactive and then turning on the ones that aren't inactive, so that are the good, you know, parts of the calming brain, maybe actually helping people with their addictive behavior. So I know they referred to a study. I don't know if it was recent. But so people are going to have to play around with how food addicted are they, because there are people. And then this is, you know, one of my other tips. If you can tolerate, make substitutions in your diet. If you say you can't live without bread, make a low carb bread. But then you're going to have to make sure that you're not intolerant to the almond flours, the coconut flours, the carnivore breads, whatever. You can go all carnivore bread. You can keep the sweeteners out altogether, or you can use alternate sweeteners that aren't sugar. And do, like, I mean, Eric Westman is very permissive when he says use sucralose or, you know, the artificial mm-hmm. sweeteners if you have to. Not everybody agrees with that. But people have to, and people can play around with it. Is your health improving, and is your appetite not suppressed? If it's still activating your appetite and you're not able to control your eating, then maybe that's not a good avenue for you. But individualize it, and individualize it for your patients. If you're a practitioner, you know, you can analyze whether food is satisfying or if it's still continuing the hunger
trigger more eating.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. So, I mean, if that little bit of artificial sweetener taste prevents you from going out and binging on a bunch of carbs, then it's done its job, you know. And Eric's very strong in that, and so is Rob Silas. Like, they both strongly advocate that if you need to have a Diet Coke or something else, have at it, you know, as long as it doesn't have any calories in it. And it don't, when, you know, and definitely no carbohydrates or sugar. And they'll say, like, maybe down the road you might be able to wean yourself off, maybe you never do. I mean, I still have something sweet every now and then. It's normally but monk fruit or something like that. It's not sugar, but it doesn't
sweet, but
I don't agree that it triggers most people who, you know what I'm saying? I think that most of us, apart from maybe some that are really, really badly addicted, are able to have something sweet and enjoy that dopamine bump from that, and not from that sweet taste sensation. It doesn't stimulate. I hear so often people talking about how you know, your body secretes a bunch of insulin in anticipation of the sugar that's not there because it tasted the sweet taste. There's no science that shows that.
Mm.
There's no trials that show that at all. Maybe one day they'll show that, but there's nothing that shows it then. So that's per somebody's opinion that they start to preach as the gospel. And then there's other people now that fail because all they needed was a bit of sweetness from a Coke Zero that would have helped them to stick with it, and now they don't stick with it because they've been told that they can't have this Coke Zero.
Yeah.
So
I had a client. He was drinking a liter of full fat Coke a day, and the first thing we did. The first thing we did was switch to low carb, low sugar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was the first thing. And then he just started dropping it down. So instead of having a liter, he'd have 900 mils, and he dropped it down. So he was ending up having, instead of three 330 mil bottles, he was having one a day.
Mm. No, I mean, even that.
That's going to make it's a difference.
It's still going to be a huge benefit to him, that reduction.
Yeah. So, Doug, Pam, thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, only a pleasure.
Thank you awesome. For having us. Thanks for listening in, everybody. If you've made it here to the end or not, I don't know. But
yeah, thank you.
We look forward to seeing you in person very soon and giving you a giant hug finally after all these years.
Yep, absolutely. I'll message you about meeting up.
Yeah, for sure, Jackie. Thanks.
We really look forward to it. And speak to immersing soon. Ourselves over in the UK for a couple of weeks is going to be fun. We just did that in Australia. It's really fun to meet people, the local people, and immerse in. Oh, tell me before we get there, are there any funny coffee ordering scenarios in London? Because when we got to Sydney, Australia, oh my gosh, it was so hard to find the kind of it's already okay difficult if we want a sugar-free or a heavy cream full fat coffee, but they had all different names for things and they thought we were completely crazy in Sydney, Australia.
Did not have a clue. It was horrendous.
Looked at us like we had no heads.
Trying to order coffee was, I swear, I wish there had somebody been got a video of me trying to order, ask Pam, me trying to order coffee one time.
With cream.
It was hilarious. Well, it was hilarious later. At the time, I was so frustrated.
I'm going to ask the question in the Facebook group because I don't know. I do not drink a lot of coffee and I don't buy it out. Coffee's not my thing.
You make it at home. Okay.
People in Australia will spend $5 on a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. So I don't. I have it at home.
Yeah, exactly. We do most of the time. We do it at home because it's true. You can spend.
Ask the question.
Please do, because we didn't know how to order what we wanted.
There's any
to order
secrets to ordering coffee?
Traveling.
So that they know. So that, that, you know, if we want something with heavy cream and a sugar-free syrup or something like that, we normally bring our own monk fruit drops with us as well. But still, we had no idea what to call these things.
I shall find out for you.
Thank I was you, making these things and showing them, trying to take the coffee and put that. It's like, and they still said, so do you want a flat black or a flat? What's a flat white or
flat white? Yeah,
flat white or some other kind of black.
That's an Australian thing that we have here now as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so lots of espresso.
White coffee, coffee with milk.
Well, that's the thing, but then you want it to be a flat white, but you don't want
milk.
You want cream. Like,
This lady, I think it was a tea shop, but she literally said to me, "You will never find one person in Australia putting anything fatty in their coffee." And I was like, "That's not true," because I'm meeting with at least 200 or 300 people in the next couple of days at a meeting that are all going to put fat in their coffee. But we teach more people. On that note, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you so much.
It would be great if you could support us through Patreon. Go to patreon.com/fabulouslyketo and you can choose the monthly amount you wish.
Can you recommend a guest we can interview? If you can, click on the link in the show notes to send us your recommendation.
Would you like to join our Facebook group? Search for Fabulously Keto on Facebook. Our Facebook page is called Fabulously Keto and you can follow us there. Or you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Fabulously Keto. Or follow us on Instagram, Fabulously Keto 1. Did you enjoy the show? Let us know you listened by tagging us in your Insta story or Instagram post using the handle FabulouslyKeto1 and the hashtag TFKP. All the links are on the website and in the show notes.
If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, click the subscribe button. Reviews help us to be found and reach new listeners. Please leave a review of our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. We appreciate you taking the time and read them all.
Disclaimer. The information in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing in this podcast can be taken as advice. Whether our guests are doctors, healthcare professionals or not, they're only sharing their own opinions and stories, and this does not constitute a doctor-patient relationship. It's always best to seek professional medical advice should you wish to make any changes to your current medication or treatments. Also speak to your own doctor if you have any concerns about your health or you wish to make lifestyle changes, especially if you're taking medication.